Hello, this is Damien O'Mara and you're very welcome to the programme. Our guest in this edition is one of the finest amateur boxers this country has ever produced, a serial winner over the course of his career, and the leader of the boxing squad which represented Ireland in Beijing back in 2008.
Now, anyone who watches the Irish amateur scene on a regular basis will know that Egan is almost part of the stadium furniture on the South Circular Road, and he's brilliant. This has been a great Olympic Games for European Union medals. He's been collecting goals in that department, as well as collecting Irish, but there's one medal he'd love to have, and that's the one with those five rings.
Kenneth Egan, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks a million for having me, Damien.
10 national titles. You're going to go down in history as one of the great amateur boxers of all time. In that sport, how important is it to have the Olympics on your CV to truly be able to say you're an Irish amateur boxer?
It's a great question. You know, I remember winning my first senior title back in 2001, and that was my main goal. My main objective was to be senior champion for Neilstown Boxing Club. And just from then, senior titles just started to come back to back. I was 8-time senior champion before I got a chance to qualify for the Games and qualify for the Games. So I didn't want to be remembered as an 8-time senior champion. That wasn't good enough for me. Now, for some people, one senior title is amazing. I had 8 senior titles and I wasn't happy. I needed that logo, that sign, that emblem of Olympicism, if you want, that 5 rings on my tracksuit. And qualifying on April the 12th, 2008, in Greece was the icing on the cake. The 8 senior titles were amazing, but that Olympic title was something special.
There's a clip during one of your fights during 2008 of Jimmy, who talked about the fact that you'd been robbed. You know, he was quite strong about the fact that you had had so many opportunities to qualify previous to that, that for whatever reason hadn't fallen into line. So was qualifying for the Games as big, if not bigger, than the medal you ultimately won?
I always make this great statement when I'm talking about qualifiers, and I'd be the 6 qualifiers. 6. You know, some people get a chance to go to 1 or 2 or maybe 3, but I had 6 attempts. 3 for Athens in 2004, which I failed miserably. I just wasn't ready. You know, didn't perform at the best that I could. I was still learning my trade with the high performance began with Zorro coming on board and stuff like that. So I really wasn't ready. I wasn't mature enough. And I didn't take ownership of my talent back then. 4 years later, in some great training camps with Zor and getting the opportunity to represent Ireland again in another Olympic qualifying programme, if you like, failing 2 more attempts, it was really, really getting worried at this stage. And I really started to doubt myself. Am I good enough to be an Olympian? Should I be an Olympian? You know, do I deserve to be an Olympian? And all those negative thoughts were kind of winning the battle at the time. But I remember sitting down with Gary Keegan and having a good chat with him and talking about, look, just take ownership of your talent and let's just focus on the job in hand. One fight at a time, one round at a time, one punch at a time. And when I broke it down, I simplified the journey, you know, by step by step kind of a process, I just looked at the first opponent, the first round, the first punch. And with that, got to Greece to qualify. And I remember beating the German. When I dropped to my knees, that's where I won my Olympic medal. But I just went to Beijing to collect it. Because the pressure I put myself under to try and be that Olympian was immense, was savage, that it almost nearly crucified me. But the fact that I just took a fight by fight, round by round, I let my talent just display itself. I just took control of it. And when I qualified, the pressure was off. I had become the Olympian I always wanted to be. I got to wear that tracksuit with the 5 rings. And that was it then. I could start enjoying the sport again. I know it's terrible to say that because of the pressures and the stresses of being an Olympian and watching your teammates qualify before you and you're left on the sideline being the captain looking out at them going, is it ever going to happen to me? But getting that title of being an Olympian, the pressure was off and then it was just the freedom to express myself in the competitions after the qualification.
We'll chat about the fights in a moment, but did you enjoy that experience then in 2008? Could you embrace the whole thing and enjoy that week of boxing?
I just remember like dropping to my knees, you know, and qualifying. I rang my mum straight away. I said, "Mum, I'm going to Beijing." You know, she'd seen me come walk through that airport many a time with no medals, no qualification, no nothing, down the dumps. You know, feeling sorry for myself. It's never going to happen. But I remember she always used to say to me, "Your time will come. Your time will come." And I think the big message there would be, and you know, for me as an individual, but people listen, I never gave up. I kept coming back to the gym floor. After failing and failing and failing, knocking on the door again. Let's go again, lads. Let's go, Zor. What do we need to do again? I could have easily gave up after Athens, the 3 attempts at Athens, and walked away from the sport. But I gave it 4 more years. It's a big risk when you don't know the outcome. And to sacrifice 4 more years of life to try and get that elusive kind of a ticket, that golden ticket to the Olympic Games. So,
Did you approach it differently because you were the captain? You've mentioned Billy Walsh, who was the head coach, Zor, who's done so much for Irish boxing, subsequently Gary Keegan, who did a lot of the mental skills with you. But you look at Paddy Barnes, the late Darren Sutherland, Jonjo Nevin, Jonjo Joyce. That was some group of talents, that band of brothers that was there in Beijing.
Yeah, you know, the five was stuck together as a unit throughout the whole games. You know, there was a training facility allocated for us, a bus ride away from the village. We went out once. It took us 2 hours to get there and 2 hours back. So we said, you know what, we're going to train in the village. So the five was stuck together.
But that would have been very unusual.
Yeah. It was crazy for us to get on a bus and head off 2 hours away, you know. So, but it was great that the five of us in the one team just gelled. We had great crack together on our downtime. Plenty of slagging, you know. We kept ourselves grounded. We had achieved our childhood dreams together, the five of us, you know, to represent our country at the Olympic Games. And I remember being in the village. Now, Beijing went out of their way to provide and produce one of the most amazing Olympic Games ever. And to be part of that and watch all the different teams operating and training. And it was just great to be there with the tracksuit on, knowing that, you know what, we're going to go here and try and perform to the best that we can and see what happens.
How did you change your approach, though, in terms of being the leader, being the captain, setting the standards, setting the blueprint that ultimately was going to hopefully bring medals home?
I remember when the draw was made at the very first day in Beijing, the draw came out, and what happens is Billy and Zor would bring us into a room together, the whole team, and himself and Zor would be sitting there, and you'd go from lightest to heaviest and read out the draws. So Barnes enforced, told him when he was fighting. Got to me then, right, Kenneth, unfortunately, a bit of bad news, you're unforced. So I couldn't go to the opening ceremony because I was fighting the next day, so I had to watch myself and look after me. That was fine. Didn't mind that. So I got enforced and I started the ball rolling. Got my first fight out of the way, Virgin Islands, Julius Jackson. I'd boxed him 6 or 7 months previous. I kind of knew I had the beating of him, but I just wanted to put on a good performance to get the ball rolling. Let the boys know that, you know, we're out here to do business.
But there is a pressure in that, because I want to play you a clip. Here's Billy Walsh's reaction to the draw and the fact that you were first man in.
The first man into the ring would be your captain.
Yeah, it's nice to start with our captain, and hopefully he can show the boys the way to go for the rest of the tournament.
And let's hope he'll go very well indeed.
Bill O'Hurley, but there must be a pressure when you're the leader of the team and you're the first one in. You don't want to come back with a defeat because it has the potential to set a negative tone from the off.
Well, of course it does. The pressure's on you, you know. Being the team captain and representing the team and the country and your clubs and your family and everything else, you know. But as I said previously, my biggest achievement was to qualify. You know, and once I qualified, I went out there, and as Billy would say to me, Kenneth's on form when he's smiling. When I'm happy, I'm in that dressing room, when I'm chilling out and I'm having a bit of crack, that's when I'm dangerous, you know. And that's the way I just kept that kind of a format throughout the whole games. And I says, like, I said it to Jimmy McGee after I got out of the ring. I says, Jimmy, I'm going to be the first man in and the last man out. And lo and behold, I stood by my words, you know, and I got to that final. But it was just one fight at a time, one round at a time. Didn't care who I had in the next round until that fight was over. And that was the beauty of it. You know, I didn't want to look too far down the draw to look at the medal. That, I had no interest in that.
So Julius Jackson, 22-2 in your round of 32. You reflect on the round of 16 as the most pivotal fight of the lot.
Yeah, the Turkish opponent, Muffar, he was a tricky opponent. I'd seen him box before in different multinations. And I was thinking, this could be me danger, man. I'd never boxed him before. And so it was something that I really had to adjust to on the day. As soon as the bell rang, I had to adjust very, very fast. He's a big, tall fighter. He had a good right hand as well. So, but again, I just stuck to my game plan, got me fainting going. Once I got me fainting going and my distance, I'm very, very hard to beat.
I watched all of the fights back. Like, the level of consistency with which you fought. Like, you went in to every bout wanting to do your best. There was no sense of, I'm going to taper my way into this championship.
Yeah, even looking at the scores for the first four fights, from the first fight to the semi-finals, I think I conceded 6 or 7 points. That's in over 20 rounds of boxing. So it wasn't, I couldn't be hit. And if people aren't hitting you, they're not scoring, they're not winning. So it was making myself very, very hard to hit. You know, that was one thing I was always quite good at, was I'm a counter-puncher. I had good feet, good distance. And if lads aren't hitting you, they're getting frustrated, they're making mistakes, and when they start making mistakes, I capitalise on that. And that's exactly how I planned out my whole Olympic Games.
The one that ultimately stands out, the quarterfinal against Washington Silva, and a man that you'd had the opportunity to fight before. I want you to relive it, and the day that you ultimately became an Olympic medalist.
Egan does make one. There's another left to the body, and that was a sinker right into the belly button of Washington Silva. Don't tell me he isn't hurt. He's playing macho and pretending he isn't. But Egan's 5-0 ahead, looking extremely good. 7 points to nil at the end of the third round.
This is huge for Irish boxing. He's being told to relax now in the corner. 7-0 he leads. So this round is all about Kenny Egan defending and getting a second medal for Ireland inside an hour and a half. Let's go back to Jimmy for the final round.
Can you see any way he's going to lose this? I cannot personally. Look at that right hand going out from Egan, snapping into the jaw of Washington Silva. They're counting it down for Kenneth Egan. 5-4 He's there by 8 points to nil. Egan has won a bronze medal. Congratulations, Kenneth. Finally you made it to the big league. And now that you've done yourself proud. And Ireland have two men in the semi-finals of the Olympic Games.
So Paddy Barnes had fought, I think, an hour or two before you and had brought home a medal. How do you recap on that fight in particular?
Yeah, it's very emotional. Now, listen to Jimmy. He was always a man that I'd always connected with right through my career. He sadly missed it. I know, it was just to perform on the stage, you know, get everything right, make Washington Silva miss, you know, 8-0, like, in a quarterfinal of Olympic Games. It's special. That's special boxing, you know. The enormity of it all, you know, I didn't see that. I just seen an opponent in front of me that I didn't want him to hit me, full stop, you know. And if I was avoiding those shots and making him miss, that's, you know, just even hearing the crowd there and the madness of it all. Back then, I didn't look at it as being as big as it was, you know. Now, when you mentioned the word Olympic, you know, it is something special. But it was just another fight. Just another target to hit, and another one just to get out of the way and go through.
The support was phenomenal when you consider this wasn't an Olympics that was on our doorstep. And it is so evident from all of the fights how many Irish people were in the workers' arena.
Yeah, like my whole family went over there for the whole 3 weeks, apart from my mum. She didn't like to fly, so. But there was great crowd of Irish. And Irish support, you know yourself, any sport, we're just brilliant. We are amazing. We support each other, something fierce. But to hear that crowd, and you could hear them shout when they landed a good shot, you could hear the cheers and the screams, you know, and that was nice to feel that they had your back. It was like a home Olympics with the crowd they had there, you know, but special moments.
In a moment like that, can you be satisfied with bronze, or straight away are you thinking, I have the medal now, I need to upgrade the medal?
Definitely. As soon as I got the hand raised after beating Washington Silva, you know, at the bronze, right, what's the worst thing that can happen? I come home with a bronze. I wanted to go for gold now. That was it. Gold medal.
And it's whatever pressure exists within the week, is it completely gone? It's
totally
stage?
Gone. I have a medal. You know, that's it. It's in the bag. But I knew myself. And when I got the news, I had Tony Jeffries next. The smile. If you had seen me, I'd have smiled from ear to ear because I knew Tony wasn't beating me.
Now, it's interesting you say that, because I listened back to some of the coverage and people talked of you going into that fight as a potential underdog. You don't subscribe to that at all?
Not a snowman's chance. I boxed him a couple of months previous in the EU Championships, and the fight was stopped with a cut. He sustained a cut. It was a small little nick. But I had the measure of him then. I just knew I could beat Tony Jeffries. And he said that in a recent interview he gave on Instagram, he was talking about the fight that we had, and he just knew that I had his measure. Now, it was nice for him to say that, because I did have his measure. And I knew myself, as soon as the bell rang with Tony Jeffries, I just had his measure. I had the distance, I was faster, I was sharper, I was quicker off the ball. You couldn't have given me a better opponent for an Olympic semi-final. You know, that's being honest. But I still had to beat him. That's the thing. There's no point saying these things. You had to get in there and put me plan in place. And I got me plan in place and took the lead. And, you know, the rest is history after that, I suppose.
Another one from Egan, and he goes 4-1 ahead. And it's a lovely lead to have as the second round comes to an end. Kenneth Egan, 4 points to one ahead, and boxing, as we know he can, and he has done so often. There's a minute to go in the penultimate round. Another point for Egan. He's only conceded 5 points now in four bouts at the Olympic Games, and he's gone 7 points ahead. 7 points ahead. 8-1 it stands now. Jeffries tried all he knew. He just hasn't the quality and variety of punch to trouble the Irish captain.
8-1, and now he surely is on his way to an Olympic final.
But for Kenneth Egan, there's 1 minute to go. 1 minute, and he leads by 10-3. Kenneth Egan is in the Olympic final.
And then, I love the way you're beaming. Do you watch these back at all?
I've watched the final recently there with my daughter. I put it on YouTube. It came up straight away when I typed in my name, and she's only eight, so she really doesn't get the whole, I suppose the weight of it, you know. But Yeah, I watched the final. It was nice to watch.
2 points still separates them, but Egan, I just feel, is growing in confidence. 2 points, basically, is nothing. One good Egan flurry and he'll have it. He's got one back. It's 6-5 for the Chinese. Coming to the end of round three, there's a certain amount of booing percolating the atmosphere here, and at the end of round three, Cheung Chama leads 7-5. And again, there's some booing here. They feel there should be more scores on the board for Egan. 3 points separates them. Egan has 1 minute go. 1 minute. Imagine somebody says to you, 1 minute away from the gold bullion. He's pulled a point back. Referee has made them break. 9-6 is the score. Goes another point ahead, and that may be the convincing moment as far as gold medal is concerned. Egan has pulled one back. It's 11-7. 5-4. Countdown. And it's a gold medal for China. And Kenneth Egan, naturally, he's disappointed. He goes to his knees in the ring. He's a lot to be thankful for, and nothing, Kenneth, nothing to be sorry for.
Is it fair to describe it as a controversial final?
When I beat Tony Jeffries, I walked out of the ring to do my interviews with all the gang, Marty Morrissey and all the gang. I looked back behind me and the second semi-final was on. And the Kazakh was fighting a Chinese opponent. I was hoping the Chinese opponent would win because the Kazakh I'd sparred in a camp previous and he was small and compact. And I said, when I seen the Chinese opponent getting his hand raised, Zhang getting his hand raised, I said, lovely, I'm in business now because I'm a big target to hit. I didn't care that he was from China and was fighting in China. I genuinely felt I had the beating of him. So with that, went to the final, weighed in. And on the way in, the morning of the weigh in, we had to go to a hotel to weigh in. And we weighed in and I seen him at the final. I gave him a wink, I gave him a smile, you know, like as you do, you know. And off we went. But, you know, the first round killed me in a sense where in the whole competition I'd always been in the head. I'm a counter puncher. I take the lead and I hold the lead and I make you miss and I punish you. But there were shots that I landed that he got. There were shots that I landed that I never got a score for. And if I had got the lead in any way, shape or form, he would have never won the fight. You know, I was a bit disappointed when I come back and sat down and watched it again and kind of I was robbed of a gold medal. But look, I'm over that hump now, and if I was offered a silver medal at the start of those games, I would have took with both hands. You know, I performed out of my skin for those 3 weeks. I was untouchable the way I was boxing. If I had to beat that last fight, I probably would have been up for the Val Barker trophy along with Lomachenko. Now, he went on to win the trophy for being the best boxer, but I could have been right behind him because I was just, you've seen the scores there, you know, lads were just punching thin air. You know, because I was happy, I was enjoying myself, I was having fun. And that's when an athlete is dangerous, when they enjoy their sport.
What's the homecoming like? Or how aware are you when you're out there of the impact that you were having at home?
I spoke to my mum briefly after the final. She was still at home. And my dad actually left Beijing to go home to support her because the house was just bombarded. It was just invaded.
Did she watch your fights or just...
No, back garden. She stands in the back garden looking up at the
very similar to Michael Crude's mother as well in 92, yeah.
She'd hear the cheers and the grunts and the crowd and she'd come back in after each round and then go back out again. So our nerves would be gone, you know. So she'd never watched me fight. So when my dad came home to support her, he was there. But a bit of an invasion in the house, you know, with the media intrusion and everything else that was there. So, but it was great. The local shops and all support brought down food. It was just fantastic. It was an amazing 3 weeks in Clondalkin for the Egans, you know.
But the challenge for an athlete is you come back a much bigger star and public property in a way that you might not necessarily have been before you left.
Yeah, look, as a team, we went out there to represent Ireland in a sport that, let's call a spade a spade, a lot of people didn't really think much of, you know, amateur boxing. It's not one of these high-flying sports. But when we performed and we won the medals, things got serious and people recognised that Irish boxing was back on the map. There had been a big drought there for 16 years since Mick Caroot won his gold and Wayne McCullough. So, you know, there was questions being asked. Is the high performance working? You know, is it doing its job? Are the right people in the right places? All these different questions about the high performance. But when we went out there and we stuck together as a team and as a unit, we performed, we got the medals, we come back, we proved that, you know, something here is working. But it was just a different atmosphere when we come back. Like, it was just that immediate intrusion, the whole fame thing, people wanting to piece you. We couldn't handle it. I couldn't handle that personally.
And you've talked about this before. The one notable thing from those commentaries is, to a moment, Jimmy McGee refers to you as Kenneth Egan. You were Kenneth before you left, and then there's almost a creation of Kenny. You became something that you weren't necessarily were in reality.
Yeah, I've always been Kenneth.
And you've been very open about this.
I heard Jimmy saying that when he was commentating there. Kenneth, you mentioned me full name. It's always been Kenneth. Just the couple of lads from the north, Paddy Barnes and the likes of them, would call Kenneth Kenny's. So Kenny Egan was just the name that kind of stuck in boxing terms. So I come back then, people related me to being Kenny Egan, and it's just always been Kenneth. My immediate family call me Kenneth, my brothers, my close mates, it's Kenneth, and it's always been Kenneth. It's never been Kenny at all. But that alter ego then kind of, I rode that wave of fame for a period of time, and got myself into some stupid situations with alcohol and all of those stupid things, you know, and not being able to make decisions, and the professionals knocking on the door, promoters. And it was just, I was all over the place, and I couldn't really figure out who to trust, who not to trust. And it was tricky. It was really tricky time, and I was kind of felt myself, I was isolating myself because I didn't want to make those big decisions.
And it's important to say that the support system that exists for athletes, in many ways, athletes subsequently benefited from the difficulties that you and others faced post-Beijing.
Yeah, you know, it was trial and error. We went out there as a team of five. Did anyone expect us to win medals? Probably not, but we felt we were good enough to perform. And then all of a sudden we turned around, we're bringing back three medals. And there was no structure in place. There was no timeline. There was no, right, what's next? How do we manage these athletes? And it was just a free-for-all. And that, look, it was a learning on that, because the London, you know, they were more educated around looking after the athletes as people, not just as a product, you know.
As odd as it might sound, do you ever regret winning the medal for the difficulties it brought you?
There was times in my past after the Olympic Games where I wanted to just throw the medal away. You know, it brought an awful lot of hassle to the door. But when I look back at it now, and the person that I am now and the recovery I have under my belt, you know, it was nothing to do with the medal. It was just my own self-sabotage. That's what I was doing, you know. Not being having the ability to stand up and take responsibility and ownership for my own behaviour. Once I managed to do that and stay sober a day at a time, I'm so proud of that medal, you know. I know the hard work that I did to win that medal. The endless training camps, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Russia, in the middle of the winters. It's a tough sport at the best of times, but when you're in those environments, that tests your character. And when you can stick that out and come home and go back at it again and get beaten and go back at it again, people don't see the struggle, you know, but they see me standing on a podium. But to me, it means much more than just a medal around my neck. It means it's a sense of fulfilment, a sense of achievement, a sense of purpose. That I worked so hard from 8 years of age right up to standing on that podium, and the struggles I had right through those games, right up to the podium finish.
And when we look at it, obviously yourself, Paddy, and the much missed Darren medalled at those games. Do you think of Darren much? Is that something you talk about? Is it, you know, he's such a loss to Irish sport?
Yeah, you know, I give talks on a regular basis around high performance and you know, mental health as well, which is a massive thing in my life, you know, and he does come up an awful lot, because me and Darren, you know, we were a weight between us, but we locked horns many a time in training camps. You know, you'd pay to watch us sparring. We used to kill each other, and I mean really beat each other up, and we brought each other on so much. If he hadn't come onto the team when he did, I wouldn't have been the boxer I was, you know, and I looked up to Darren because he was the ultimate professional. He was Mr. Perfect, his diet, his hydration, the way he lived his life. I was the total opposite. So to see him evolve, and I remember even saying this when he landed in Beijing, I'm out here to get a medal, I'm going pro, I'm winning a world title. That was his plan. I didn't know whether I was coming or going half the time.
But like the three of you, and then obviously John Joe, well, Paddy went to medal in London, John Joe medalled in London, that you can lay claim to the fact that Beijing was a moment in time which started a phenomenal journey. Like, it revitalised Irish Olympic boxing.
I think the Olympic Games in Beijing opened the doors to show young boxers that we can achieve something special when you put the work in, the right structure in place. We opened the floodgates. We've seen what happened to London, Rio, Tokyo. Beijing was the catalyst. We're the ones that opened the door to say, you know what, we are going to go out here, perform and do our best. We got the medals. This is the proof is in the pudding. We are good enough as a nation. Because I remember many moons ago, you go to a competition and lads be looking at the draw and see an Irishman. You go, that's not too bad. It should be him handy enough. But them days are over now. Them days are long gone. When you beat an Irish person in a draw, you're going, right, this is going to be a hard night's work. And that's the proper way it should be.
You're not defined as Kenneth Egan, the boxer, but it's such a big part of your life. How important is that physical medal?
Yeah, look, it's recognition for all the sacrifice and all the hard work and all the training that I've sustained throughout my career to stand and be recognised as an Olympian. You know, we're quite rare in this country, you know, and to be being an Olympian first and foremost is amazing, but to be an Olympic medalist, I'm in that small pocket. And, you know, maybe when I'm 70 or 8 years of age, please God, I live that long, I can sit back and tell me daughter or granddaughter or great-granddaughter about the journey I had to be in, you know, to stand on the Olympic podium. Because it is history, you know, it's something special. I'm very proud of the medal. I'm very proud of the journey that brought me to that podium. But as you say, it doesn't define the person I am. There's an awful lot of living to be done after you step off that podium, you know. So it's just one part of my life that was quite successful. I had a bit of a downturn and a bit of turmoil, but now I'm back in a great headspace and living a quite content, successful life.
And the Kenneth Egan that I'm speaking to now wouldn't change a moment of any of that, because it's ultimately brought you to where you are at the moment in life.
I wouldn't change anything at all. I've no regrets whatsoever in my life, and I'm so lucky and I'm so grateful that I haven't got any regrets. All those blips and all those struggles, all those hiccups, they build character. They shape the person I am today. And look, there's two things I do every day, Damon. The first thing is when I get out of bed, I put my 2 feet in the ground, I tell myself I'm a good person, because I am a good person. And when I go to bed at night, I say thank you, because I'm very grateful. That's it.
And we're grateful to you for all that you've done for this country and the great moments you brought us and the great joy you and that strong team brought us in Beijing in 2008. Kenneth, thank you so much for sharing your memories. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. Great stuff.